Hey everyone, welcome back to the Viral Volley Podcast. We're a little continuation from the volleyballmag.com interview with head coach of indoor women's volleyball at Santa Clara, Jeff Alzina, but who's also the head coach of beach and the AVP commentator on court number two. Thanks for coming back again, Jeff.
Associate head coach for indoor, head coach for beach. I know, it's a mouthful and it's a lot.
Well, you know, we just know that you got the skills and the knowledge. So, hey, but you've been doing great work. And we are actually talking about the performance of Nick and Phil and Alex and April being their back-to-back champions for first the Monster Hydro Cup in weekend one and now the Wilson Cup in week two. They are unstoppable right now, it seems like. And you'd mentioned that Nick and Phil are relaxed, comfortable. But what else is going on that's giving them such powerful performances from both of these winning teams?
Well, on the men's side, you know, I mean, Phil, when he plays really hard and is super focused and is very healthy and is enjoying himself on the court, he's arguably still the best player in the world in beach volleyball. I mean, Phil's amazing. Nick is phenomenal. He has gotten better every single year he's played, and he's gotten better every year he's played with Phil through their partnership. But I think it's no secret that, you know, that they went through some burnout at times. You know, they've been playing this game since 2003 professionally, 2004 professionally. It's a long time when you're playing AVP seasons plus FIVB seasons and everything else you do. It's a huge crowded calendar. And so they've gone through burnout, you know, in 2018, 19. But I think this time off and letting them be at home with their kids and their family has got them healthy, got them rejuvenated, remotivated, and they just look totally smooth. They look like that combination, that tough combination to find as an athlete where you're very relaxed and happy, but you're also really focused and intense. And so, you know, your mind is free and your body's loose, but you're just firing on all cylinders, and they look really hard to beat. That was an amazing win for Phil's 100th career victory.
Well, that actually was one of the big note points or headliners from the weekend. Phil Dahlhauser getting his 100th career win. And in that group of people, Kent Steffes, Karch Karai, I mean, pretty incredible population of people to be considered with. What was the key to his success?
Well, he's got the whole package. You know, I mean, there's a lot of really good blockers out there, but Phil does everything. He's not only a tall blocker, but he's a very skilled technical blocker. He's also a really great jumper. I mean, there's a lot of 6'9 guys who don't jump very well or jump average. Phil's a very high jumper for 6'9". He's very thin and blessed with good health, so he hasn't had any like major joint problems over the years. He's been able to have a longevity in his career because if he needs to, he can play the left, he can play the right. He's phenomenal at dropping off the net, and he's one of the best setters in the world, frankly, too. So, I mean, he has the absolute whole package. And when you consider him also being able to go back to the service line when he's feeling fresh and ripping jump serves, I mean, he's just literally a scoring machine. I was there for his very first win in 2005. I was coaching Jake and Stein in their team of the year MVP season. And we thought we were going to have those guys because they were so young. We just won, I think, three in a row. And they stopped us in an overtime battle. I think it was like 17-15 in the third. But, gosh, that was 15 years ago, and Phil has basically been one of, arguably, the best guy in the world since.
Oh, on the weekend, he definitely was the best. You look at his hitting percentage, he hit 569. That's good for the best of the weekend. Then he gets 22 blocks, then 24 control blocks, which are number one in both those categories. On top of that, he gets five aces, which is second for the weekend. So wow. He was the man if he, all weekend.
I know the AVP puts out some really good statistics, and that's where you're finding some of that stuff. And I went through this today. It's really cool because you can go to their site and find totals, but you can also find per set averages, which is really neat. The one thing they don't have is your overall kill percentage. They have your hitting percentage, which is a combination of all your offense and defense, side out and transition. But just pure kill percentage, Phil's at 64%. And the next closest is Theo at 60. So he's he's a Terminator.
And there's the analyst part that we're all just eating up on your stream. So look at that. Looking inside the numbers. So
on the women's side, Alex is 63% kill ratio. The next closest person is Sarah Pavin at 55. Wow. And Brandi Wilkerson at 55. So you can see that, I mean, when you can just terminate the ball, you know, 63% of the time when you get the ball, that's just, that's a huge number. And that means basically anytime you're controlling the first contact, you got a good chance of ending the rally for a point for your team.
Yep. Well, one of the other headlines for the weekend, and I know that I actually got this nickname from you listening to you on court two, the prodigy, Miles Partain and Ty Loomis. What did you think about this youngster's performance on the court?
It was really cool to see their chemistry. Ty is in a situation where he gets to play the mentor, the veteran, and Miles is the apprentice. They just didn't have size. It's the only real reason. They both sided out really well. They set really well. They competed well. But they just don't have size as a block. And so they are going to have to side out almost perfect. But it's great. I mean, I was able to start coaching Miles quite a bit back in 2017 and 18. And he just keeps getting better and better, which is cool. Because sometimes when kids kind of spike and become great early, they may fall off a little bit. Absolutely not the case with Miles. He still works his butt off, trains his butt off. He's texting me during the event, asking if I can give him scouting reports and some leads on some of these other teams and players, which is awesome. So he's hungry for knowledge, and he's got already, at 18 years old, he's got a huge IQ. He's just really, really smart about the game already. I mean, talking to him when he was like 16 years old, I could talk to him in the same manner that I was talking to someone who's, you know, 34 years old and had won, you know, 15 ADP events. So he's a sponge and a great hard worker.
Well, you know, even just him in those certain situations seemed like he had ice water in his veins because he was so controlled. He is very even keeled the entire time. Can you Absolutely. Comment on his style of play?
Huge strength for him, yeah, is his, I call it red mind and blue mind. Blue mind is more your analytical side and trying to be calm and cool and think your way around the court. And red mind is allowing you to have emotions. And you kind of need a little bit of both usually to be great, but most people are more dominant in one or the other. You know, your red mind type player is a little more like Casey Jennings, Casey Patterson, Stein Metzger, a young Nick Lucena, you know, and your blue mind players are more like Todd Rogers. And then that's what Miles likes to do. It's just kind of like really be calm and quiet, not too much celebration, and just stay focused on what's next. And yeah. I think that calmness allows him to play his best and make really good decisions at such a young age, which is, that's one of the rarest characteristics of an 18-year-old player's, is the, you know, good decision-making.
Yep. Well, he definitely, from a physical and a talent standpoint, he's got hands of silk. Ty Loomis got one of the Progressive Hammer nominee awards or one of the bangs, but man, I got to give credit, and I'm going to admit my bias. I'm a former setter. So if it wasn't for Miles Fakie on two with a jump set, he had a zero block to go up against and Loomis just hammered it.
That was sick. I hope everybody can go find that play because you saw a lot of on twos all weekend, but that was one of the best on two fakes. Right? Like he went up so high that Phil, arguably the best blocker in the world, one of the best read blockers ever, went full maxed out on Miles. And he just like pulled his arm down and set butter.
Yeah. Well, he gave us a ton of highlights just in the short time he's been out here. I'm, you know, and you guys are saying it, even the court one guys, Dane was saying a lot about seeing a lot of this kid come in the future. He's going to be a mainstay on the tour.
He'll be there. Yeah. He's got the bug and he's got the talent. So he's not going anywhere.
Well, let's shift over on the women's side. Someone who really caught eyes from a stat line perspective and a performance perspective, Brandi Wilkerson, another Canadian. She had 125 kills on the weekend, which is good for third on the weekend, but also blocking 30 blocks and 22 control blocks. And on top of that, 22 aces. Can you talk about her performance in this series so far?
She just seems to also keep getting better and better. I mean, it was like maybe four years ago, I think, down in Long Beach, one of her like first times coming to the States, you know, to play it with the FIVB that was down there in Long Beach. Yep. And she was a good player, but like you couldn't see the whole package coming through yet. But man, over the last 3 years, she has just totally developed. She's a good transition setter. She can be a little bit better in that range, but I mean, she's not bad at all. And yeah, I mean, she can side out at will. She can swing from both sides. She can shoot. Her float serve is unique. She has a really, really low toss and gets on the ball quick, so it's hard to read. And makes really good decisions with her serving too, I think, on who and where she's going to serve. Super terminal as an attacker, and blocking obviously is her specialty. FIVB best blocker in the world in 2018, the only year in the last 4 years that Sarah Pavin didn't win it. But Brandy's just really, you know, she's listed about 5'11". I don't think she has overly long arms, but she has a very good jump, really, really good eyes and timing. She senses when the blocker is going to shoot or hit so that she can either throw her hands low and over or go a little higher and try and touch or swat. So she's awesome. She's going to keep getting better too.
Now you're addressing her technique, and I just viewed it as she has hang time because she does a lot of swatting with just one hand because she's hanging for so long.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you got to have good eyes to do that too. You got to have hang time to have hang time. You got to jump at the right time. And she's pretty awesome at that. I think one of the best in the world.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the teams that kind of fell out of the main draw last week but had to qualify to get back in who performed really well was the team of Emily Day and Lauren Fendrick. They're actually, you know, top five in the major stat categories, and they look really good considering that, you know, they're kind of playing out of position.
Right, playing out of position, M. Day being on defense full-time, and Lauren, a new mom with a child under 1 year old, not being down in the L.A. area, getting to train full-time, but obviously still being heavily surrounded by volleyball and still working out. But they were amazing. Yeah, their match, they had to win three. They had to win two. They got the bye, right? They had to win two to get in to qualify. Mm-hmm. And then their match against Kalinske and Stockman was – nothing short of incredible. Yeah. On day one, they were trailing significantly early on throughout the first set. Stockman was just burying balls and banging on them, and Fendrick was hitting zero for most of the first set, and they stole the game in overtime and then came back, and I think Lauren ended up hitting over 350, maybe closer to 400. Mm-hmm. They just out-veteran. I talked to Lauren after the match. I said, you guys just out-veteran them. They just did exactly what you needed to do in a third set. They went to their total strengths, played to their strengths full time, went low error, and just kind of stole that win from them and then kept storming through the tournament. They looked really good.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you alluded to during the broadcast, and you actually mentioned it in our earlier in our discussion, but seeing a lot more options over on two. You had some comments on the stream, but can you share them again here? Podcast.
Lauren, again, part of her veteran maneuver. I think what's Lauren's 38, I want to say.
You never reveal a woman's age. Didn't watch an athlete's age.
An athlete's age, because it's really amazing. And she's so smart, you know. She's school smart with all her degrees, but she's savvy smart on the court too. She was hitting zero. And once she started struggling, she just immediately started passing way better. Sometimes people freak out about not hitting well and scoring and their passing breaks down. Lauren's passing went phenomenal. And I think Emily Day must have had at least 10 on two attacks that game. I would not think that that's something that they practiced a ton together, but Emily Day was kind of unstoppable. She was hitting over 800 at one point, mm-hmm. and in large part due to Lauren's quality passing. You know, it's so hard when you're thinking about putting a ball up on two. The easiest thing to do is to swing it too hard and force it. So the players are too tight and they're poking it and broad jumping, but she was just lifting gems like Holly McPeak used to Elaine Young's. Mm-hmm. And M. Day was just feasting all day in the middle of the court.
Well, I'm curious because there's a school of thought that was like, over on two again. What's your response as someone who's been in the game as long as you have been with the knowledge and experience that you have?
Oh, gosh. I haven't heard that at all. I have not heard that. I would wonder where that's coming from. I mean, I think it's a great part of the game, and I love seeing it in the men's side, especially when there's stuff like Miles Partain is doing where you go up and you hit a couple, but then you go up and then you set. You know, you jump set on two. Yeah. I just think it's a natural part of the game, the way that the court got smaller, and so it got tough. It got more difficult to make tough serves. And so if the passers are having an easier time with it, the first instinct was, well, let's start putting some balls up so at least we have choices to hit or set.
Yeah.
You know, so now that you've got this trend of better passing – but with gnarlier, huger blockers, you know, the first thing you should do really is try to pass that ball across the court to make the blocker go chase and follow the setter, if you will. And if they have a presentation of being able to fake or use an on two, and you can set that ball all the way back out to the pin, I mean, that's the only way that you can start really like affecting the block as much as the block has now begun to affect hitters.
Yeah.
With this small court, these antennas, tons of hard packed courts now, you know, you know, a lot more events in the world that are on concrete, right? With shipped in sand and maybe not so much wind. That's a totally different game than playing in, you know, Manhattan or Hermosa at 15 mile an hour wind. It's just, it's totally different.
Well, let's jump to our next topic. We're 2 weeks into the AVP Champions Cup series, but are there any teams that make you go, And what I mean by that is, are teams not performing at the level that we'd expect them to, or just not finding their rhythm?
I don't know. I think the main draw is playing out pretty much the way that you'd expect it. I mean, Triborne and Trevor Crabb are like really kind of pushing the envelope. They're killing everybody right up until those top two teams. Patterson and Budinger and Theo and Kame, all those four players look really, really good. I would expect them to be in those third and fifth play places most of the time. Your Billy Allens and your Casebeers and Haydens, I think they're about where they're kind of supposed to be on the men's side. On the women's side, same thing. You've got Sponsel and Clays who are kind of knocking on the door and showing some like incredible potential at times and some really good play. It doesn't look like they're ready to beat the top two teams, and certainly not on a consistent basis right now. Mm-hmm. So you'd expect them to be in those third slots. And then, I don't know. I think it's kind of shaking out about how you would expect for the most part. Chrissy Jones and Tracy Callahan, I always want to call her Tracy Meemler, they're playing some really good ball.
Yeah.
And they had to come out of the qualifier originally. I wouldn't be surprised to see Zana Muno and Amanda Dowdy Lawson possibly qualify and get in there as well. Reed Pretty is with David Lee. I don't know. I haven't got to see them play. So I feel like I can't really make comment on their play. They're obviously two super talented players.
Right.
I'm just not sure if they don't have the right game plan or if they're just not executing, but physically and overall volleyball experience wise, you might think that they could squeak in there and get a win or two as well.
Yeah. Well, outside of the A team and Team Dalsana, who have been your top team or top teams or individual performers that really stick out from just this last weekend for the Wilson Cup?
Well, I think, a lot of people that I've been around or been talking to this week were really impressed by Melissa Jimena Paredes. I certainly was too. I absolutely regard her as one of the better players in the world, but she really stood out to me. I mean, her digging to me was on another level. Obviously, she's got a large block in front of her that's a good block that's taking up a lot of space, but, you know, she's digging heat from one of the best attackers in the world, like April. No problem. I think you see some of the other diggers, you know, getting their stats padded by running down some shots here and there on smaller blockers. No one's going to shoot a million balls that she can go run down because they're going to be, you know, touched up in the net by Pavin.
Right.
So what she does better than other people, I think, is hangs deep and is really balanced and gets platforms. She doesn't get this stuff or this stuff or one. She gets platforms on hammer balls, and man, she's such a good reader, and it has such a great quality of location to her digs. She really stood out a lot to me.
And she led this weekend with 77 digs just from the Wilson Cup. But I just noticed, put this together, looking at the full stats for the two series weekends, she has 144. She's 77 per weekend now.
Wow.
So that's amazing.
Yeah. And that's with beating teams in two and not getting as many opportunities, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, not going through a big loser's bracket or something like that. So, yeah, she's really amazing with that. I'm quite sure that, you know, Scott Davenport's her coach, and they must work a lot on just really continually trying to bring her a little more offense. You know, she can create a little bit of more rhythm on her approach, or a little more space, or a little more vision, or a little more power. Just she needs 5-10% more of those on each approach to be able to terminate a couple more balls, and they're, you know, they look like the team that has the best chance to be the surging A team right now.
Well, I wanted to mention on the women's side, because this blocking was so huge on the women's side of things, with Brandy getting the 9, which is her career record in a match. But Brandy had a total of 16 for the weekend. Sarah Pavin had 13, and you realize that's the 2018 FIVB best blocker. And then Sarah was the best blocker in the FIVB in 2017, 2019. it's an all-Canadian contingency that's running the border at the net, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're just great athletes and great volleyball players, and they have gone on to find great partners for themselves, too, that are just a perfect fit. So it's not really that surprising, man. It's a ton of size with a ton of IQ and ball control. So that's why they're there.
I feel like I'm going to give some real love to our Canadian neighbors, because the next person I'm going to bring up is Kame Schulk. He's been doing phenomenal things on defense and on the attack. So what's brought his game to the level where it's at now?
Well, I think it's defense. I think he's slowly but surely, steadily becoming a better defender. Every month and every season, he's been out here on the AVP tour after switching over to playing AVP rather than FIVB for Canada. He's always been a phenomenal attacker. I mean, he can hit on the left, hit on the right. He's tall and quick. He's a bit like a Haydn. You know, he's 6'5", but just fast twitch. Kame's arm gets on the ball really quickly, and he's really good at hitting both sides of the ball, sideline to sideline. But then when he needs to, he can hit the kind of indoor, high, flat, spatchy, high hands, deep middle stuff. You know, so you take that. He's got power and speed on his arm, and then he's got shots. So yeah. He's just passes dimes. So siding out's never really been his issue at all. It's just been trying to learn full-time defense. And now that he's got a fairly elite and sizable blocker, you know, he's getting better. Like I said, every event he gets a little bit better at being patient, not like getting juked or, you know, chasing the ball too much. And the other piece is not doing so many commit plays, not too many threes and fours where he just has to like show up somewhere. He's really actually learning the art of reading and holding.
Well, it's unfortunate this is going to be a shortened season, because technically this last weekend is the last tournament for the season. But let's transition into the final cup of the series, which is the Porsche Cup, which, seeing that Porsche on that stage over there at the venue, one day, that's the goal. But it's
an incredible backdrop. Love that. Good Matty Bishop, love the sports car, the shine. It is a good-looking car, that's for sure. I am just the polar opposite of a car guy, so I don't even notice if they'd be in there.
You're more the ball guy. Oh, that's a good Wilson volleyball. I like that.
Yeah. I've got my 2005 4Runner, and it's like I'll ride it into the ground.
Well, hey, what came out today through Instagram are the men's rankings following the Wilson Cup. So the top six are Dalcena, Gibbon, Taylor Crabb, Triborn, Trevor Crabb, Patterson, Bruner, Buttinger, Schulk, and Casebeer, Haydn. Let's talk about the qualifiers. It's Slick Allen at the Q1, Loomis Partain at the Q2, Evans and Santos Q3, Ratledge Del Sol at the Q4. What do you anticipate happening out of the qualifier this weekend on the men's side?
Well, I wish my brain worked fast enough to actually see the exact matchups for the play-in game, but I'm not quite that quick. Billion and Stafford, I'm not sure. I mean, it's a jumper's beach, but Billy's a little bit more of a shooter's player. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to get the majority of the balls for the most part. So, you know, when it's a hard pack surface, it lends itself to basically be able to just kind of spike and hit a lot more. When you shoot on a hard pack surface, yes, you're up high and your shots can be crisp, but a lot of defense in pursuing shots is your just first step explosiveness, right? And so when it's a hard, we call it a fast running surface, people can run that down quicker. So I don't know. For Billy, I think Billy's got to swing at some more balls or try putting Stafford up on two a little bit more for them to punch through. Partain and Loomis, you know, I don't know. They should be pretty confident, pretty stoic. They're riding a high, so they'll have a good look at that. Ricardo and Miles have been playing really well. They got knocked out in the round to get in the first week. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can never count out Ricardo. You can meet three Olympic medals and all the talent they have. And Miles is playing really well, too. So those three look really good. Otherwise, you got Ratledge moving on down there. So I don't know. I think it's going to come. The two are going to come out of those top three for sure on the men's side.
Well, let's jump over to the women's side. Out for the main draw, number one seed, obvious A-team. Number two, Umano Paredes-Pavin. Three, Hughes Wilkerson. Number four, Clay Sponsel. Number five, Dave Fendrick. Big jump of two for them. And then the sixth, Kalinske Stockman. And the qualifiers, Q1, you've got Jones Callahan. Q2, Pardon Cook. If Chris Akook comes back. Q3, Quiggle Wheeler, and Q4, Reeves and Cannon. What are your thoughts on that, the qualifier for the women?
Man, Reeves and Cannon have like played the playing game, I think, back-to-back weekends now. So they're knocking at the door. They're closed. That's a good team. Cannon's dead legit. She's 6'4". Can't really serve her too often. I mean, she's a side-out machine. And then Reeves is a really big, explosive defender. So this could be their weekend to punch through there. You know, we've seen you when you get knocked out on that game to get in, it's either going to stay with you for a long time or you're going to, you know, it's going to piss you off, basically. You know, they could be kind of like pissed off enough to like say, this is what's going to happen this time. We know exactly what we need to do down the stretch, you know, in those last few points to close those games out. So I like them. They're two really tough competitors. They've got the house divided, Bruin and Trojans. But Callahan and Jones are legit. You know, they're playing really, really well. There's no way you can just say that like they're not going to qualify either. There's a lot of talent there. And then, like you said, if Cook's healthy, that team has done a ton together. You know, Pardon and Cook, not only they have results together, but they just have great chemistry. They have a play a style that no one else really plays. It's kind of like two medium to smalls. And I don't know, there's no way you can really count them out with the amount of experience they have, the kind of wins that they can have. The only thing that kind of hurts them is, again, it's a jumper's beach and they like to kind of do some more late pulling and stuff.
Right. Well, with that, I mean, are there teams who can challenge the back-to-back winners in both the men's and women's side of the A-team and Team Dulcina?
I don't know. I think the winners, you know, the winners are going to come from the top four, if not the top two seeds. I think the semis could very easily line up 1 through 4 again as well. You know, you got Sponsel and Clay's at the 4 and Brandy and Sarah at the 3. For those, the real question is, can either of those two teams at the 3 or 4 seed beat, you know, the 1 or the 2 in the semis and get into that final? And then if so, can they close out a final? It's a lot of hard work. I mean, to beat the 1 and the 2 seed in one of these tournaments is, I don't know. I put the chances maybe at like 10% or less.
Wow.
That's two really, really, really good teams with like historical size and strength, in my opinion.
Right.
You know, 2 6'5" blockers on the women's side that can bang on two and shut down so much court. And with the talent on the defense side behind them, yeah, I don't see anybody else winning the final this weekend.
Well, actually, this could be the same question, but for the entire Champions Cup series, I'm gonna mention the standings for the men's first this time. Number one is obviously Dalhasser Lucena with a first and a first finish. Number two, Jake Gibb, Taylor Crabb with a second and a second finish. And in the 3 spot are Triborn and Trevor Crabb with a third and another third finish. Seems like everyone's gonna be playing for the second and third position, which is that bonus money. Anyone feel have the ability to press into the top 2-3 spot?
I don't know if it's going to be somebody different. I mean, Chase and Kane are playing really well right now, and Casey and Theo seemed to find their mojo last week too. And Trevor and Tri, they just seemed – they're able to crush other teams. Their offense is so good right now, but they've got to find ways to score in transition. They're both getting digs. I think they are combined for 7.3 digs. No, sorry. 6.5 digs per set, and Taylor is at 7.3. Mm-hmm. So functionally, they're right there behind Taylor, and their side out, in my opinion, is just as good. So if I was Jose, I would be looking at my stats. I would have stats on why they're not scoring in transition. Is it the setting? Is it being on a certain side? Right? Like sometimes if you get a dig in the middle of the court, you just go to the side you're used to being on. But I found in 2010 when I had Jake and Rosie, that even though Rosie had played the left, he was almost twice as good in transition from the right. I kept that stat of literally what side you spiked on in transition over the course of a season. And Rosie was like, yeah, he was twice. He was double. I think he was like 25% more kills.
Yeah,
on the right side. So they need to break that down to figure out a couple more points per game, and they would have a chance to challenge in there. But I think, you know, the 1 and 2 seeds are going to finish 1 and 2 again. It's really who's playing for that bronze and who can win some money in that Porsche Cup, which is pretty cool.
Yep. Well, let's shift over to the women's side. Number one team, A team. Number two, and it's actually a tie. Hughes Wilkerson with a 2-3 finish in weeks one and two. And then Pavin and Humana Paredes, a 3-2 finish. And then you have Clays and Sponsel at the number four spot with a third and a fifth place finish. What do you see happening there for the actually silver and the bronze?
Well, the big game, right, will be that second round match between Brandy and Sarah versus Canada. We'll call them, right, Sarah and Melissa, right? That's when they'll face off, is that second round. And so whoever wins that is going to have an easier road to the finals by sitting in that semi so early. The loser is going to have to go over and play probably who will be, let's see, the five seed, you know. I don't know. I think the one and twos are going to finish the same. And again, it's going to be who's playing for that bronze. It'll be whether Brandy and Sarah can maintain the strength they showed in that first and second event, or if Sponsel and Clays can kind of smooth it out and really challenge one of those teams in the semis as well. They would look to probably play the two seed in the semifinal. If they can get there and get to that final, they might steal that money. But they look good. The first, they got really unceremoniously knocked out in that first event, with Kelly Clays hitting at least three balls in the middle of the net to finish the round against Sarah Hughes. They came back last week and looked like they had improved a ton. They were making way better decisions. They looked calm under pressure. They used a lot more of pass, set, hit on easy balls instead of trying to rush their dumps on two and things like that. Mm-hmm. So if they continue that trend, I mean, to me, they were significantly better last week. They also beat Kleinman and Ross 21-12 in that first set, came out gangbusters. So, I mean, if you can beat that team 21-12, you've got a chance to do something special. So they just need to put it all together on late Saturday or Sunday.
Well, this is a head coach of Santa Clara Beach, Jeff Alzina, and associate head coach of women's indoor and play-by-play and analyst for the Amazon Prime Video Court Number 2 with Maddie Bishop. And all the audio sensation and education is courtesy of he and Maddie, and it's been a great run so far. I'm looking forward to hearing you on the Amazon Prime Video feed on Saturday morning, bright and early, 8:15 Pacific time. So I don't know if you have your assignments, but why don't you feel free to plug anyone else that you want to hear, Jeff?
Well, I think the only I mean, it's just been amazing that they've been able to give the fans full court two coverage. They've never done that with, we had one announcer the first weekend, we were trading off and on, and then we decided to combine last weekend. And I think it flowed really, really well. Maddie did a phenomenal job of setting up the matches and setting up me and providing play-by-play and really putting me in a comfort position of being able to just give some color analysis between plays for the most part. So props to ABP for being able to do that. They're doing it remotely. Maddie's out in Montana and I'm up in Santa Cruz, Northern California. So they've gone through and figured out how to solve some of those technical difficulties we had and been able to provide really, really good matches your weekend long. So I think the only thing people would say is like, hey, how about the qualifier? How about we get that qualifier in there too? So I don't know, maybe going forward, we'll look to do that too. But it's been an absolute treat and a blessing to be able to speak on the sport that I love, that I've given the vast majority of my life to. And I'm looking forward to another really, really good weekend of high level matches start to finish.
Yep. Well, your passion, experience, knowledge, and just anecdotes of the game are touching a ton of people and they're digging what they're hearing. So now if they could just see this beautiful beard regularly, I think it'd be an icon. Forget the bearded bros. It's the bearded commentator. This is Jeff Alzina. I look forward to if you're open to doing a recap after this is all done, and you know, who knows, maybe we'll talk about your Santa Clara team coming up if the season is a go.
We'll see. We have no idea right now. Indoor's looking okay, but we got to do everything safe.
Yeah. Well, this is Jeff Alzina once again, and be sure to tune in to the AVP Champions Cup Series, the finale this weekend, Porsche Cup, starting. Well, actually, qualifiers on Friday, early 8:15. Look for players' Instagram and Facebook Live feeds, and then Prime Video on Saturday and Sunday. And do you know if Sunday finals will be on NBC yet?
I haven't heard that yet. They made a later decision last week as well, and so I'm not sure if they'll cover that or not. But being the finals, I hope they will. Yeah. And, you know, obviously players should be, you know, fans should be tuning into you too. You do a really great job of carrying those rounds, and especially the qualifier as well. So.
Awesome. Well, hey, Jeff, thank you again. I look forward to chatting with you again and listening to you this weekend.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Appreciate it.